So I suppose co-design was at the very heart of this. And after the protocol committee looked for a report, very quickly things got in motion. We had a steering group internally within Dublin City Council to oversee this project. And it was chaired by my predecessor, Deirdre Ní Rathaillig. It included Lindsay, as I've already said, Margaret, Pat Nestor, our access officer, Niamh Kiernan, the conservation officer, the retired Dublin city planner or deputy city planner, Mary Conway, Brona Carey and Helen McNamara, who are from our property development section, Brian Hanney, your area manager that you're all familiar with. So there's a steering group that has overseen this project internally throughout. So at the start, a working group was established. And at the time, we're going back again to 2016, 2017, we worked through the Dublin City PPN Disability Group, and from that, a working group was established. And I would like to acknowledge the really hard work and contribution of that working group, who comprised Dolores Murphy, Mick Keegan, John Graham, and Jonathan Hanna. The group also included the Irish Wheelchair Association, and as you can see, there were meetings throughout, and they're listed there in front of you. So the PPN were also involved. We also consulted the Protocol Committee on numerous occasions, giving regular updates as the project changed. We've attended the South East Area Committee to you on two occasions. We've had extensive consultation with the tenant of the Supper and Round Room, the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, the Irish Georgian Society, the neighbouring buildings to the Mansion House and the neighbours to the rear. And we've updated the external stakeholders, so all of those stakeholder groups at regular intervals. So at this stage, I think it would be good to hand over to Lindsay, who will be able to take you through the various design iterations that we have been through.
Yeah, just to say, Ruth, and thanks for that, we've been joined by the Lord Mayor. Lord Mayor, you're very welcome as the current occupant and resident of the Mansion House.
So. Thank you very much, Dermot.
And we'll take you in as soon as the presentation finished, OK? Thanks. Leslie.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to look back on and summarise the multiple design options that we looked at, all informed by the consultations. Just before I start, just to mention the existing platform lift that's there that was upgraded in 2018 with a significant consultation with our disability working group, as mentioned. And at that stage, the lift was replaced. There was improved access for people with limited dexterity. The website for the Mansion House was upgraded, so there was clear instructions and for people to make appointments to visit. There was staff training involved in that, additional signage, intercom, alarm, and we ensured that the parts for the lift, existing lift there, were locally sourced, so we didn't have to go to Italy, which had happened on the previous platform lift. Just looking on the drawing number one on the left, again, just to summarise, what we have is a 7-foot raise from the footpath to the existing entrance into the shared access to the oak room and the round room. And there's not at the moment, there's 9 steps there, and there's a platform lift. Just for information, from the top of the stairs, external steps to the existing door, that's a 1 in 21 ramp, 1 in 21 slope. Just for information, I think you've all obviously walked it. It is actually, it's very hard to perceive a 1 in 21 slope. 1 in 21 slope will come up later on. So just on item point number three, or drawing number three there, the initial meeting was to address the request that was made, which was to put in a ramp. And we working within the confines of the boundary of the garden, the boundary of the Mansion House, the space between the two buildings, we put the ramp in to address, to show what was the impact. And the ramp is 41 metres long. It has a significant rise, and there was numerous constraints, including fire exits from the supper room out onto the terrace that it needed to be addressed. This was all, again, part of the initial review. That led on to a significant review in April 2019 with the disability group, where we looked at three options, which I've noted there, number four, the first option, very, very straightforward, but bringing it back to first principles, ramp, steps, and one number platform lift. That was the, and that was noted as being the preferred option with the with our disability consultants, our disability co-designers. Option number two, to add in a second platform lift and keep the steps that were there. Again, this is a, the approach of having a minimum intervention. How can we make this work with just, again, minimum intervention, the small steps? That was not recommended by the disability organisations, which I'll cover later. Option three, one number passenger lift and steps. And this was to put in a enclosed lift, which is separate, different to a platform lift. Platform lift is external. They're, by their health and safety requirements, they are slower. And by the fact that they're outside, as Ruth mentioned, they are prone to weathering and ongoing repair and upgrades. We were instructed to explore that further, and there'd be further consultation with the groups before it would be considered. Again, I'm going to go through very quickly through about 8 to 10 options of what was looked at, and just for clarity, on the existing condition is there at drawing number one on the top left, on the top right, that was a simple intervention of adding a second platform lift, as I mentioned. What it did was it took away the one of the issues of the platform lift breaking down. We had a second lift, so the risk was reduced. However, for obvious reasons, as Ruth outlined, it wasn't considered appropriate. The second option there, drawing number three, was to look at the ramp option within the space between the two buildings. With any of the ramp options, inevitably you had to go up, back, and up again. You always had that zigzag to work with the 1 in 20 ramp, and anything lower than that wasn't acceptable. Putting steeper ramps wouldn't be acceptable. My point on that drawing number three is it doesn't tie in with universal access, because you walk in and people with mobility issues either take the ramp to the left. The more straightforward route is to go straight ahead on the steps, and then you also have the platform lift. Because there's such a rise between the path and the entrance into the building, there was always a requirement to always have a platform lift. The ramp would not replace the platform lift. By the building regulations, if you go over 2 meters in height with the rise, you have to have the platform lift as well as the ramp. So, again, the pros and cons were clarified with ourselves, with our consultation groups. The next option, other options looked at the same time, option on drawing number four and bottom right, that was to put in an internal lift in a glass box, having a canopy over it, leading into the Lady Moressa's parlour, into the mansion house. Again, the issue being raised was it still has the limitation of people queuing outside in the rain, and with the nature of how the round room, and especially the oak room, is used, accessibility groups, this is to be expected and would be normal use for the building. Thank you. And on to the a further option. I think this has been kind of commented on a couple of times. You might be aware, as you walk up into the route, the promenade into the shared access, there's a light well to your right, serving the lower ground floor of the mansion house. We looked at an idea of going straight into that at low level. It's there, it's existing, it would have been quite minimal intervention, and then we'd have a requirement to have an external lift at the end of that walkway. While it functions, it's very, the dignity of the users is not maintained. because it's very clear. Here's the main entrance, the formal, the steps you go up. That's where you go, and accessible people with requirements would have to go in a dark and relatively a narrow space between the buildings, and it's not inclusive, and it's not where people who didn't have the choice would choose to go. And again, that was made very clear. A lot of these options were in the context of a broader groups that we were consulting with, so that wasn't being sold as this has been the right approach. It was an approach for consideration. On drawing number two in the top right, this is when we realised the limitations of working within the space between the supper room and the mansion house, just from the mats not working out with regard to ramps. So the proposal to bring a ramp into the Lord Mayor's garden in front of the supper room, and again to keep the existing approach pretty much untouched and have all the work in the Lord Mayor's garden. This option was developed in numerous iterations on this page and the next. They all had the same challenges and the same limitations. Inevitably, you walked in from the path through the front gates. It was inevitably a tight space between you having to get to a stairs. The ramp was always going to be a separate turn for people with disabilities, and the ramp was going to be a steeper ramp because of limitations. We still had to have the platform lift. It was a complex route. The approach was developed to try to work it into a landscape garden approach, where everyone would walk through the garden to get into the mansion house. But it was considered by all parties to be too long. It felt like a secondary route that wasn't the main entrance that everyone should be using. And it also, between the six options there, it was becoming a monumental intervention into the building. From a conservation point of view, it impacted the mansion house. The Lord Mayor's garden was significantly changed. And it was taken away from the kind of oasis of what the garden was, because it became part of a circulation route. So as we continue to develop through those schemes, I won't go through every scheme. It represents the options were, every option was looked at here. This was a lot of people working to try to get the options that we have. Where we came to next was to try to simplify it. And again, have you seen it was very complex. And the simplification is, and you can see this is a simplified version, which gets to the nub of the Part 8 approach, which is level access, a very, very gentle slope of 1 in 21. Every user into the round room and oak room uses the same entrance door. Everyone goes inside when they enter the building. There's a large lift, and there's a large welcoming stairs, and the lobby is of a sufficient size for a number of people to queue if required. At the same time, as you see on the blue arrows, when you turn right at the bottom, when you're walking closer to the entrance door, we'd have an entrance into the mansion house, the lower ground floor of the mansion house. From the scheme, obviously has a lot more light, will be a lot more usable in future. And the opportunity to go into this will be the entrance into the mansion house. And because of the space that we have down in the mansion house, we have the opportunity to have a formal reception area there, cloakroom, accessible bathrooms, there where they should be, which is always a challenge in the mansion house. And again, just moving back to the universal access, it's having the equal opportunity to access the building, and the shared entrance is the the best way for that to occur. We were complimented by the disability members on our group, and we were complimented by the conservation our specialists that we're inputting into the project as well. So I'm now going to pass on to Margaret Glauper, who's going to go into the more developed scheme that was submitted for Part 8. Okay, thank you.
Good morning, councillors. So as Lindsay mentioned there, the current Part 8 proposal consists of a sloping approach from Dawson Street down to the lower ground level, giving access to two new entrance lobbies, each with a lift, which provides then universal access up to the upper ground floor level. So the two main elements for this Part 8 are to improve the universal access to the public rooms and to achieve for the first time universal access to the Mansion House and in particular to the Lord Mayor's apartment on the first floor. So I'd like to talk you briefly through the proposal. So I will show you a couple of 3Ds of the design which were included in the Part 8. So the first one is a view from Dawson Street. As you can see, the existing stairs are proposed to be taken out, and instead we have this gentle slope going down to the lower ground level to new access entrance lobbies. So I'll just move the cursor. So this is the new entrance doors here, an entrance lobby that will serve the round room and the oak room, and there also is a new op into the Mansion House here into the lower ground level to a new entrance lobby there. So this is just kind of zooming in on the entrances there. And I think most people agreed at the time when we talked about this proposal that this is a very straightforward design and it would be simple to negotiate by everyone. As I said, this is the new entrance lobby here. For you know, giving access to the round room and the oak room, and then through here would be then the lobby that serves the lift for the Mansion House. So then the next few images are in interior images of the new lobby proposed for the round room and oak room. So the image on the left shows people coming in down the slope into this space. On the left, you have a generous stairs leading up to the upper ground level, and then on the right, you have a very generous lift leading also up for people that need to use the lift. On the right, that's then a view from the upper level down towards the lift, the new lift and the new stairs, and then to the left, if you can see my cursor here, that's the new door leading into the oak room. So people will come up either with the lift or the stairs and can either continue on to the round room or turn left to the oak room. And then here are just the drawings, the floor plans again. So this is the lower ground floor plan. People approach it from Dawson Street, make their way down this slope, and then either into the new entrance lobby serving the oak room and the round room, either taking the stairs or the generous lift, or they can turn into the new lobby proposed in the basement of the Mansion House and again get to this new proposed lift. Then on the upper ground floor level, again, I talk first about the new entrance lobby for the oak room and round room. So people either come up the stairs and can make their way through to the round room, or people come up the lift, can make their way to the round room or turn into the oak room. And then likewise, you have the new proposed lift in the Mansion House, which gives exit, people can exit into this central circulation space. And then the last floor plan is the first floor plan, the Lord Mayor's apartment. And so you have the lift in the Mansion House, which will give direct access to the Lord Mayor's apartment. And then just on the programme, so we envisage that the detailed design will start in Q3 of this year. This includes also this preparation and lodgement of the disability access certificate. So we envisage that will take about up to a year. Will also include construction workshops and consultation about how this will be built. Then the tender will follow on from this, which will be Q3, Q4, 2025, and then subject to consultation and agreement with obviously our tenants in the round room, we envisage that we might be on site Q1 to Q3, 2026.
Okay. Okay, Pat, is there something that Pat's going to do that will make a difference to the Lord Mayor? Just the Lord Mayor's in a hurry. Pat, how long will you be roughly?
Five minutes.
Are you okay there, Dahi, for five more minutes?
Yeah, go.
Okay, I know the Lord Mayor has to go and do something. Okay, Pat, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd just like to endorse the process that has been underway for the last number of years and the outcome that you're seeing here today after so many iterations. We've heard of the challenges of accessing the Mansion House, and I've been there myself with people with disabilities. We've queued in the rain for one at a time to slowly use this platform lift when it's been working. And it has been a difficulty that the city has been struggling with for a very long time. This proposal works with the levels of the site. It brings people from Dawson Street level, the least difficult way down to the lower level of the building, to the same floor level as the fire restaurant. And from there, a full grand entrance stairs and a high capacity lift that's internal, that is much easier to maintain, that will be far more reliable, far higher capacity, far higher speed, and making that the main entrance to the Mansion House. For the first time, the access to the Mansion House will be truly universally accessible for everybody, with no discrimination on the basis of persons' abilities, for the public, for people with disabilities, for the future Lord Mayors and their families, and for distinguished guests that visit our city. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Ruth. Thanks, Leslie. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, you all. I'm going to bring in the Lord Mayor first because he does have to go to another appointment, and then we'll come back to everybody, okay? Lord Mayor?
Thank you very much. First of all, to the members of the South East Area Committee, thanks very much for facilitating me here today. I really appreciate it. Guys, look, I've said this to many people in the background, and I'm also going to say it now in public. I have a lot of concerns around this. I think it's over-designed. I think it's a sledgehammer approach. And I come with this from a perspective that since I've been Lord Mayor since last June, my nan has literally been coming in on a weekly basis. My nanny's in a wheelchair. I get there's serious issues with the lift that currently exists there without a shadow of a doubt. However, I think this is completely and wholly over-designed. And my thing would have been, we talk about simplicity and ease. If we put in a really good lift that works, we wouldn't have any issues here. And people may disagree with me, but like when we look, it's still, once you even go inside the building, it's still stairs and it's still a lift. That's exactly what we have at the moment. It's stairs and a lift. We just have a lift that's very, very unreliable, which isn't good enough. And yes, I have been embarrassed on a couple of occasions this year where people have had to be turned away from the Mansion House because the lift was faulty and the lift didn't work. However, if we had a good enough lift, and you look at what's happening down around the old Central Bank where they have a fabulous lift, I think it negates all of these works that need to be done in terms of the rest of the Oak Room. When we also look at it, it's great to say that we have a new entrance into the Oak Room and things like that. Can you clarify if under our lease we actually have access to that? Because I'm hearing that we don't, which means that we will be looking, the Lord Mayor will be looking for permission from our current tenant every time we want to host an event in the Oak Room, which that to me just seems ludicrous as well to believe, because I believe the lease starts at the second set of doors there, which means the new entrance will need the permission of the tenant for the Lord Mayor to host stuff in the Oak Room. And I just think it's totally over-designed. As I said, if we could look and just fit a really, really good lift that works, we'd be able to do something here. And that's coming to somebody, as I said, I've had my nan in on a weekly basis. Like, this is also going on since 2016, 2017. And in light of our last meeting in the council, can you confirm if it's UNCRPD compliant and if DPOs have been involved or if they need to be involved as part of this project? Because we don't want to end up where we were at the last council meeting. And I mean, for a project, like, I requested a bell and it took 7 months just to get a bell on the front of the Mansion House because the bell was at the top of the steps on the second. And I just think we need, look, we need, everybody needs universal access, and but we need a lift that works and that makes sense in terms of where we go. And at the moment, I don't think this current project in its current guise is suitable. And I'll just say that. But Chair, thank you very much for facilitating me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. And just for, because you have to go, I'm just going to get the answers to the Lord Mayor's questions and then we'll bring in everybody. James is first.
Just in terms of the over-designed, well, I suppose it has been through a series of design iterations with those stakeholder groups. It is a complex project in terms of the mechanical and electrical rerouting that does need to take place, which is contributing to the overall cost. So that's, I suppose, in relation to that. I suppose the central bank lift that the Lord Mayor is referring to, I should probably defer to our senior architect in terms of the listed nature of the building. Lindsay, would you mind taking that?
Yeah, obviously, this is a protected structure and a national monument. There's sensitivities involved in any of the changes. I think that's very clear. Just regarding the lift was replaced in 2017, and to replace an unreliable lift. Unfortunately, the nature of external platform lifts are ongoing repair and upgrade. There was no compromise in the quality of the lift that was installed in 2018. We got the Rolls Royce, and that unfortunately is the challenge, and that is what's impacting on raising the issues. Thanks.
Lord Mayor, I'm not asking you if you're happy, but do you want to add anything?
About the lease, Dermot, because if we don't have permission to use the space and we're going looking for permission to come in that hallway every time that we want to have an event, where are we on the... Do we currently have permission if we put a doorway and we change the oak room, we put the door down the other side of the oak room, do we have permission to go in there?
Ruth?
So there is, yes, I think it's a 20-year lease, and it's managed by the property... Planning and Property Management section. That part of the corridor that you are referring to is in the lease agreement, but as far as I know, and I can certainly get this confirmed for you, Lord Mayor, that you know that can be renegotiated or discussed with the tenants, and but I will need to get a copy of the lease and discuss it with the law agent.
Okay, so at the moment we don't then, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Hold on, Leslie wants to add something.
Just a comment on the ownership of the building is Dublin City Council, and as a planning matter, the lease and any kind of right anything like that would be separate from the planning process. Thank you.
Sorry, I don't really understand what you're saying there.
Bensel, can you clarify?
Because the building belongs to Dublin City Council, we are entitled to a Part 8 on our own property. The implementation of the Part 8 is something separate with regard to agreement with tenants tenants on their leases. So traditionally. It can be negotiated during the lease or it can be negotiated at the end of a lease.
Okay, so if the tenant refuses permission, though, and it's a 20-year lease, that means we wouldn't be able to do it if they won't renegotiate. And I'm not saying that they will or they won't. I know they belong, but I'm just saying that's the position. Am I correct?
Yes. Well, I don't know the position of the tenant.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get clarification from the law officer in relation to that aspect.
Cheers. Thanks, Mel Dermot.
Okay, thanks. Good luck, Lord Mayor. Thanks for... Sorry, Damien. Use your mic because I can't hear you.
Sorry, the Lord Mayor asked, was it UNCRPD compliant and was there DPOs involved? It's a human right. He's coming at it from a human right. Sorry, he's coming at it from a human rights perspective, not a planning or it's human rights perspective. That's what he meant. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair, I might.
And I don't want to bring in people in the order. Okay, in fairness.
I might address that question. The state adopted the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in March of 2018, and this project has been long running. And as we heard, it commenced in 2016 with working groups and steering groups. So the project was well underway when the state adopted the UNCRPD. So there was a very high level of consultation with people with disabilities right from the very beginning of this project. It was led by the demand from people with disabilities, and they were involved in terms of the design process and the iterations. And through the consultation process with disability groups and people with disabilities, the design changed like several times and changed very dramatically into what is now the optimal universal design proposal that you see today.
Okay, thanks, Pat. And people may disagree. Damien, come in. Damien, I will bring you in, but let everybody come in fairness, in the order. People put up their hands. James Gagan. Pat, I'll bring everybody in order. Okay, thanks, James.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I think it was very helpful, in fact, that the Lord Mayor asked those questions and we got those replies before we start this discussion. In the first instance, I just want to commend the work that has been done to date on this project. It is somewhat extraordinary that it'll be, if this all goes through fruition and if it is passed, that it will be a decade on from the original proposal. I mean, at the end of the day, and I think people have said this before, you know, the Mansion House is Dublin's Oris. You know, it is for the citizens of Dublin, and you know, most Lord Mayors have used the Mansion House, similar to how presidents have used the Oris, as a venue for inclusion from every type of ethnicity, every type of ability, and every type of minority. And that is the way in which a building like the Mansion House should be used to advocate and to agitate on behalf of the rights of everyone, in particular those who are marginalised in our society. And quite clearly, at the heart of all of this, when we take away all of the concerns that people might have, at the heart of this is a very simple idea, and it shouldn't be controversial. And that's to make the Mansion House as accessible to every single person in Dublin City and beyond, so that they too can enjoy this incredible building. And I'm very minded by, really, to be honest, less so, no disrespect to the architects, by Mr. Nestor here, who I've never met, but I know what role he has as an accessibility officer. I'm minded by everything that he's saying, and what he has said this evening, and Ruth echoed it, is that right from the beginning, this has been a process that has been designed by people with disabilities, that their input has been included all the way along in this process, and that ultimately, notwithstanding what the Lord Mayor said there in respect of a family member, ultimately it is those people who have driven this process, and it is those people who are going to benefit the most. But what I would say, because it's quite clear that there are concerns about some aspects of the design, I think on the assumption that this moves on to the next level, which is to go to the City Council building, that all councillors and City Council are given a list of, you know, who has been engaged with in this process from the beginning, what was the level of their engagement, and ultimately what feedback have you received on this final iteration that is here before us from those groups and their levels of satisfaction, etc. Because I think most councillors here just want to make a decision that will benefit those category of persons. That's all we want to do here. And we want to ensure that it is universally accessible. And it seems to me that that's what you're trying to do. And I think if we know that the persons who you're trying to serve and protect, that they've had their input served throughout the whole process, I think that's something that most reasonable people will accept at a majority basis on the City Council meeting. Thanks very much.
Thanks, James. Paddy McCartan.
Thank you very much for all those presentations, Chair. I think it's something I won't miss when I'm not standing for re-election, that this basic issue of universal access has now become clouded in all sorts of arguments. And I disagree with Councillor Gagan in terms of it's taken a decade. I suppose it shouldn't really surprise people that in this chamber that we take so long to make decisions. There's various different plans that have come to fruition. They've taken ages. Some of them had never come to fruition. But this, to me, is a fairly basic, simple issue of access. We have had exhaustive consultation. We've had numerous iterations. Every option has been looked at. As far as I'm aware, the consultation has been on a scale unprecedented in terms of back and forth from the various groups. And the email I got this morning, and presumably other councillors got it as well now, querying the disabled persons have been totally ignored. I want confirmation from the law agent that the legalities of this are copper fastened and that there isn't an issue. But I'm really concerned about our inability to move projects forward. If this goes back to 2016 and we have seen all the various iterations, like what happens if this Part 8 fails? Are we going back to basics? Are we going back to the drawing board? Are we going back to a situation where a building that is over 300 years old, I often think of what Joshua Dawson would make of this whole issue of universal access. I'm sure he would have how the building was constructed in the first place. It's remarkable that it's survived with so little problem for 300 years. So I think we're making a mountain out of a molehill on this. I think that I'd be fully supportive. And I've looked at the plans. I've tried to get around the complexities of it. I'm not an architect. I'm not a good interpreter of drawings, but I'm satisfied with the team that have put these plans before us. And having looked at the various previous plans that have been that haven't been deemed to be acceptable, so I think it's time to move on. And I'm fully supportive of this proposal. Thanks.
Thanks, Paddy. Mannix.
Thanks very much, Chairman, and thanks very much for the presentations. I mean, as everybody has spoken, this has been ongoing for quite some time. And as I say, we're back, you know, in a situation where there's still controversy around it. You know, the Mansion House, you know, I mean, is compromised by the very fact that we did lease part of the estate out to the for a restaurant. And again, I just think to begin a process like this without doing due diligence on the contracts in relation to the fire restaurant and the company. We had the same kind of issue in terms of intellectual property in regard to them using the Mansion House as a logo and as a destination for the restaurant. And it took a while for them to stop that. Here we have a situation where the due diligence process of who owns what leases is there, and it's not correct to say we can renegotiate these situations because they have to come to us because we have disposals. We're the ones that do disposals and contracts. So I don't know what's going to happen in relation to that particular gate, but I find it rather strange that this has not been done and this due diligence, particularly from a local authority like Dublin City Council, because we're adamant on that in our planning. Bearing that in mind, there's an issue here in relation to universal access, not just in this particular building, but in many of the buildings that we have. In terms of lifts collapsing, our own lift here umpteen times falls out of order. You know what I mean? In terms of buildings and protected structures, the building you described, which is the central bank, was under a protected order of protection order, and then it was stood down while they did the works, and it's still going to have that order. And they were mindful of that situation because of that particular structure. Look, bearing in mind all the issues here, my main concern is, where are we compliant with engaging with DPOs? Were we aware of that, and did we bring that in? Because I think that that could flatten this situation out. You know what I mean? You know, that could be a major, major problem. I'm also mindful of the Lord Mayor, who is the resident in situ at the moment, and that is valuable experience, and the Lord Mayor is not in favour of this particular plan, it would appear. You know, I've seen other buildings like this in the UK where there's much more innovative approaches to universal access. It seems to me that this is, you know, clumsy to some extent and confusing to a large extent, you know, in that sense. Irrespective of whichever way you look at it, you're using a side entrance to the Mansion House, and that in itself could be construed as othering. That could be construed. In the meantime, as I say, you have a restaurant, you have the garden, you have all of this complex being run by the foyer restaurant, and we're somewhat subtenants in that scenario. And I would appeal to you, because I have huge respect for the people in this room. You know, Mr. Nestor, I know your work, I follow you, I see what you do, I know you're adamant, I know that you're a stickler for universal access, and I know that you've gone and measured handrails in various places, and I commend you for that. I would ask that in this particular instance, not that we have universal access and a good plan, but that this is the example that the Dublin City Council sets out here and forever after. And maybe it needs to be postponed. Maybe we have time to include, you know, another conversation with the DPOs. Maybe we have time to really get this particular right. But this would be a celebration. And I'd like it to be a celebration. At this particular moment, it's too confusing for me to be able to actually wholeheartedly support it. And I understand my colleagues over here. I really, really do. But I think, you know, for the City Council, we really, really, really need to get this primary building, this number one residence, really, really right. And I'd ask you to hear our concerns. I'd hate to see this ending up in a judicial review. I'd hate to see it end up in controversy. There are serious concerns out there. We've received emails from Mr. Dr. Robbie Sinnott. You know, and as I say, notwithstanding all of our own concerns within this council chambers, you know, I mean, in relation to this, I really do think we can afford. The other thing about this, how much will this cost? And then what is the overall cost from the outset when we started to look at this back in 2016? What kind of dollar are we talking about? And could we have built like 10 mansion houses as a result of that kind of money? But thank you very much. And I do really appreciate the efforts being made here. Thanks.
Thanks, Mannix. And now we have another former resident, Hazel Chew.
Thank you, Chair. I'll make it short. I guess to Mannix's point, I would heed what the current Lord Mayor, current resident in the Mansion House, would think, more so, not more so than others, but you have that experience of every day-to-day seeing the issues. But firstly, I'd like to thank the team. I know a lot of work has gone into this, and I know Ruth and then beforehand Deirdre had to manage a lot of this, so thank you for their time on this and their work on this. I remember a particular day where we were trying to get over, I think it was over 50 buggies up those steps. So when people think of universal access, they think of people with a disability that needs access. But I also, from the point of view that we had a lot of mothers in that year, that I think of buggies, I think of people with buggies that needed to go up that step. And how does that work when you look at the lift system that is going to be put in place with the current plans? Will it work for families when you're thinking it's not just one individual, it's a group of them? And also then in terms of a backup plan, because I know Paddy had said if the Part A fails, what happens? For me, it's very important to find out what is the contingency plan there. Is there a contingency plan? Is there an interim plan while a contingency plan is being thought of? Because the current provisions are just not fit for purpose. That lift breaks all the time. We've all seen it. And it's just, I would like to know what the follow-ups. Now, everyone probably thinks, well, Part A hopefully will go through and it will be all fine. But it doesn't sound like it's something that actually would perhaps gain the support that it is looking to gain. So I just would like to know what the backup plan would be as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. Danny Byrne.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. I just wonder why this has taken so long. It's crazy, really. With the greatest of respect to the people involved in it, it does seem that this has culminated in a spectacular failure. Like, I understand you're communicating with the different bodies. Why then are we getting a deluge of emails from disability organisations? If I set out to do this tomorrow, my first call would be to the relevant, all the disability organisations. But why are they saying to us they haven't been informed, they haven't been taken along? We would not be sitting here if they had been taken along. They haven't been taken along. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Fiona Connolly.
Thank you, and thank you for the proposal. Thank you to the design team. I was going to raise the same issue that Hazel raised of the boogies. As someone who's pushed three boogies up and down a lot of, and carried them up and down a lot of steps, I think it's really important to consider boogies as an issue. And I also think that the idea, the mock-up photograph looks really appealing because then you can come in out of the rain before you're getting access. I think that looks like a really good design feature. We'll all have mobility issues over our lifetime, like from babies right through to older age and injuries along the way. So I think it's really important that we prioritise this. I'm also thinking how do these things take so long to progress? And I think it is important that we welcome the designs and bring them to council, because while some people have, I've only received one email from one person about a complaint, and I think that while it is, progress is important, it's important to make progress even when there are people who raise issues. If we can incorporate them and stay on the correct side of the law and the guidelines, then I think it's good, important to make progress.
Thanks, Fiona. Damien, do you want to?
Thank you very much. And thanks for everybody who spoke and all the councillors. And I could see the amount of work that has gone into this over the years, and it's a tremendous amount of work with all the disability groups, and it is fantastic. You have done a lot, and it's disappointing that I suppose with the UNCRPD, the rights of people with disability, it all changed in 2018. It all changed, and in General Comment 7, Part 5, but it's in several general comments. Up to that point, up to 2018, third-party organisations, and you mentioned them all earlier, third-party organisations for people with disabilities, they represented, they talked about accessibility, you know, but in 2018 it all changed. And the DPOs, the rights for the vested rights in DPOs for disability proofing public bodies, Part 8 and all that, is now resting with them. And we had a standalone public consultation in February. It doesn't matter that this started before the UNC. We had a standalone public consultation in February and March this year, and DPOs weren't included. And that was post the Lord Mayor launching our DPO policy. There's a blind guy who was on here today. He emailed you all, Robbie Sinnott. He's the DPO guy. We had a meeting in City Council there recently. That's 2 weeks ago on Monday. He still hasn't been able to see the public transport plan. He still hasn't had sight of it. And that's 2 weeks since their meeting, and 7 months he started, and he even has a legal agreement. If we push this through today and we don't postpone it until we get more awareness and we get the opinion of the law agent, we will be breaching today here Article 29B2, and I sent it to Paddy there. It's basically what it's about is it's encouraging DPOs to come into the process. They're made up of disabled people. They have some neurodivergent side. They have a lot of issues. We have to give them reasonable accommodation. Okay, and Pat, I'm surprised that I wanted you to talk about that. They want you to talk about that. Robbie wants you to talk about that. You know, and they have to be given reasonable accommodation. And if we push this through tonight, 29B2 is encouraging these organisations. It's encouraging these organisations to get in members. God, what are we saying to that guy, Robbie? We're not listening to you. We're the public reps. This is a reserve function. We're not listening to you. We're going through. And the message that sends to the DPOs all over the country, you have no idea. This is a massive issue. It's a massive issue. It's much more than the Mansion House. It's much more than the Dublin City Transport Plan. It's the UNCRPD, which in Section 69 of the Local Government Act, we are obliged to follow the objectives, have regard to the objectives and the policies of the government. And the message that this sends out to those DPOs, they weren't included. They weren't included. We had a standalone public consultation in February and March, and they weren't invited. And there's another group called the Disability Physical Impairment of Ireland. They weren't in the... I only found this out today. They weren't. There's several emails to Dublin City Council giving them our giving us their details. They weren't included. They weren't invited into the Dublin City, the City of Dublin transport plan. They can disability proof. They've wheelchair people. They can disability proof. They're not a third party organisation. So listen, I thank. I'm allowed to speak.
Yeah. No. Don't let.
Okay. Debbie, and I thank you. And I was just about to say thank you for giving me the time. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's all talk. Claire, do you want to say anything? Okay. Okay, just for my own part, just a couple of points. First of all, I'm one of the people who believes the current use of a mansion house in terms of the restaurant and the round room is good. I think it's been positive for the city. I know there are different views on it, but I support it. I also think that irrespective of what our views are today, I think this matter should go to the City Council. The next City Council meeting is on the 13th of May. That does leave some time for some of the issues to be explored, and the City Council may decide to defer or to block or to vote for us, but I think it should be a matter for the City Council. My own preference in all of the options would have been option 2, lift. I think that I think you limited your vision on that one, to be honest with you. I think there was a lot of scope for that. Just two further points, and you may not like this, but in my own view, the two most recent architectural interventions in the mansion house were bad. I think the bar is appalling, it's awful, it doesn't work, and I think the removal of the stage seriously limits the proper use of the mansion house. And I know, again, it was done for disability purposes or access purposes, but it seriously limits. And just my final just concern is putting the door, the entrance in, and I say this as somebody who lived there, putting the door into the oak room at the far end massively reduces the ability to use that room. I think it is a huge mistake to put it at the far end. The Lord Mayor or whoever the presenters are at meetings will be speaking away and people will be walking in and out in front of them. I think that needs to be resolved. I'm not commenting on any of the other bigger issues. They've been aired here. But my own view is that no matter what we think today, this is a matter that the City Council should decide. And not the area committee. James made the point that the mansion house is like Dublin's Aurus, and I think Dublin should make this decision rather than an area committee. Okay, back to whoever.
Ruth. I think there'll be a couple of us answering these. Thank you, councillors, for your questions and feedback. I suppose just to start with Councillor Gagan, we will certainly get a report to all councillors as to who has been engaged with and the feedback on the final iteration and their levels of satisfaction. Councillor McCartan, we will also, well, thank you for your support, and we will also get you confirmation from the law agent that all of the legalities, as you say, are copper fastened, so we will do that also. A number of people have raised issues in relation to the lease, so again, I will circulate a note to all councillors on that. Just in terms of Councillor Flynn, you did ask about the costs overall and what has been spent to date. So to date, there has been a figure of £171,000 spent. That includes surveys, site investigation works, and design team fees. The overall final figure that we have at the moment for the full project would be in the order of £4.3 million, the construction being at £2.5 million. Then the...
Sorry, does that include all the previous works which we are now going to undo? Does that sum? I'm looking for the overall sum as to when we started with all the lifts and also the overall cost, you know what I mean, I think has to be included in this because it's a one project that we continuously have been coming at for years. Please.
Certainly get the costs of the previous lifts and include that, but that is specific to since 2016 when we started, I suppose, the design and preparing drawings. So that's a figure from 2016 to now. But I can certainly get the figure of the lifts and come back to you on that. No problem. Just to say as well, and I think it's something, the garden is actually part of the Lord Mayor's residence, not part of the lease. So that is part of the residence. Just in terms of Councillor Chu's question in relation to the Part 8, was there an interim plan? No, because I suppose we were hopeful that the Part 8 would be a success, so there isn't another plan. Councillor Byrne, why has it taken so long? Well, I suppose we did have COVID in the middle of it. We did a lot of stuff in terms of the consultation via Zoom and webinar, but it has taken so long because of the level of consultation, the level of design iterations. Then I'm going to hand over to Pat because I think some of those are UNCRPD specific, so if that's okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just to address some of the comments there in terms of the UNCRPD, as I said, adopted in March of 2018 by the state. Dublin City Council, like all public bodies, is to adopt the UNCRPD and the services that we provide. A consultation framework was piloted in terms of co-designing and co-creating how does the Dublin City Council as a public body effectively and meaningfully consult with people with disabilities in full compliance with the principles of the UNCRPD. And that pilot framework was carried out over the last couple of years. It is a lot of good information was established from that, and that is continuing now. And that co-creation in terms of service design and designing the service of this consultation is continuing now with further projects and the learning and how to do this. Because we must remember, as a city council and in a capital city, we have thousands and thousands of capital projects. It is so important to understand that different disability groups will have different interests depending on their disability, depending on their location, and we just simply cannot swamp groups which have typically small in number in terms of people who are not very well resourced, and it's so important that we understand what their needs are and what they're interested in and how we can engage with them and how they can tell us and how we can listen. So that is being explored now further, and that process is continuing. And the City Council absolutely wants to do this. We can see that by consulting effectively and properly and meaningfully, we can make projects better. And this project in the Mansion House is a clear example of that. The initial proposals in terms of the ramps, which was the obvious solution, or perhaps implementing a second lift outside. External lifts are incredibly difficult to maintain. The weather in Ireland, it's constantly wet. The humidity just gets into the electronics, the mechanics, the breakdowns are numerous. And it is so difficult to maintain an external lift, regardless of the encapsulation it might have outside. It is dramatically different and much easier to maintain an internal lift. So from my point of view as a construction person, as a building surveyor, the project here in terms of its complexity started out as very complex, with the ramp switching back and forth through the garden, bringing it up to a level. What we have now is removing additional modern material that was added to the Mansion House access point to the Oak Room. Like, that whole platform was brought forward in 2013. So that it's simply removing that bulk of material that was added in 2013. It's going to set off the Mansion House much more attractively from an architectural point of view. Likewise, the adjoining supper rooms and fire restaurant. The gently sloping route from Dawson Street down to the new entrance level is the same level as Fire Restaurant. Those familiar with it, if you're standing at Dawson Street looking towards Fire Restaurant across the garden, the difference in level is fairly imperceptible. And that's what we're hoping for here, and that's what the design brings forward. And the complexity of simply removing the bulk of that material, it is really the most straightforward in terms of construction complexity, notwithstanding the mechanical and electrical issues inside that Ruth mentioned. But the construction complexity of this is a reasonably straightforward project. In terms of the whether or not this project, in terms of its consultation, complies with the UNCRPD, and General Comment 7, which identified the special place for disabled persons organisations, in my opinion, it does comply, it is compliant, and every effort has been made to make sure that the consultation has been meaningful. And I think the fact that the designs have changed shows and demonstrates that the consultation was meaningful. And we, the City Council is committed to making sure the consultation is meaningful, and our ongoing co-design and service design of the consultation framework hopes to achieve that across the organisation with the great range of projects that we carry out, the complexity of our roads network, of our parks, of our public realm, of our public buildings, of our housing service delivery. There is a huge range and scope of projects that people need to be consulted on, and so we need to bring forward this framework in terms of making sure we do it meaningfully each and every time. In terms of access for families, that's another aspect, of course, and Councillor Chu referred to meetings when she was Lord Mayor with mothers and buggies. So, again, another difficulty in terms of accessing there that will be resolved by this proposal. People will be inside in the Mansion House simply by going down the gently sloping approach. There will be internally, it'll be a high capacity lift. You know, depending on the size of a buggy, there could be room for four or so at a time to use the lift. It'll be high speed, and it will transform that level of accessibility in terms of groups such as mothers or parents with buggies. Other questions in terms of the... Councillor Flynn said it should be an example and it should be a celebration, and this proposal absolutely is. It will remove the modern additions on the left side of the Mansion House, between the Mansion House and the supper rooms. It will, set off the architecturally the Mansion House and give it its own presence on the street, unencumbered by the steps and the modern approach that is currently there. And likewise with the supper rooms and fire restaurant on the side. And there's also the great win in terms of the proposals that we were working with, the ramp switching back and forth through the garden. Like, that was going to result in fairly significant loss of the garden space, losing trees that had been planted by visiting dignitaries to Dublin City over the years, and the loss of that biodiversity and that valuable green space in the city centre. So that's being addressed. The garden is maintained intact by this proposal.
Thanks, Pat. I have James and Claire.
Just very briefly, what are the factors that are contributing to the 2.5 million euro construction cost? And you might just give us an explanation of that relative to other type of projects, if there is such a comparison you can give. And then equally, what are the factors contributing to the 3.7 million overall cost? I mean, does that mean that essentially all other costs are related to design, or what's the 1.2 million above the 2.5 million? What does that relate to, and what are the contributing factors? Thanks.
Thank you. Just very briefly, just to confirm, have there been any other concerns raised by any of the other individual disability organisations around the country about these proposals? Thank you.
Just very briefly, I've no problem with the building being used. That is the round room as a restaurant. My issue is about the intellectual property and access and boundaries. So to that effect, when this is completed, the patrons of the fire restaurant tend to trespass onto our property, okay, and smoke and drink and convert. With this flat surface, it's an ideal place to go gallivanting. You know what I mean? When you come out that door, when there's an event on, to be on that step. So if I'm trying to get in there with a buggy or a car or whatever, and there's an event on there, and they're pouring out, which they will do normally, they'll come out those doors and they'll be on that flat surface, because, as I say, it's almost like pedestrianisation. What are we going to do about that? And has there a demarcation line, Candy? Because it is universal access, but as I say, with the public using that particular restaurant, and it's a high event venue, will they pour out there and use it? Because I know they used the veranda in one of the rooms there, but nonetheless, when there's a crowd, they tend to spill out onto that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for your contribution, Pat. I suppose you mentioned the word pilot. We can pilot processes and we can pilot protocols and the DPOs, but we're talking about human rights, and they can't be piloted. And they started in 2018, and no DPOs have been involved in the Mansion House negotiations. No DPOs. And before, and that's right, it doesn't matter my opinion, your opinion, that's a fact.
Okay. And we had a public consultation in February and March, and they weren't included. And we actually emailed them to tell them, really, why they weren't included. It was extraordinary. Okay? So, look, that's fine. But I want to appreciate, you really gave me a lot of space and time here at your meeting, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I keep on forgetting to turn on the microphone. Let them answer, and then I'm going to propose that we note this and it goes forward, and perhaps some of the issues relating to consultation can be dealt with between May the 13th and now May the 13th. I don't know if that'll happen, but there's time for that to happen. Damien, would you just turn off your mic? Because
I meant DPOs in regards to wheelchair ability. Wheelchair ability and sight. That's the ones I meant.
We understood what you meant. Okay. Thank you. Whichever wants to. I'm just going to let them answer the questions, then we'll deal with the formal bit of noting the section, the part A, sorry.
So if I miss anything, let me know. Councillor Gagan, you asked about the costs. We have a full cost report that I can share with you, which details out the construction costs in detail. So I'm happy to share that with you. It was done very recently, so you're welcome to that. I will share it with you. Just on the your point, Councillor Flynn, in relation to, I suppose, shared access between the round room and the oak room, there is a shared access currently. So often you can have nights where we would have had culture night and something else in the round room. And that's really about, and I'm looking at Miriam who runs the Mansion House, that is about us working collaboratively with the round room. And we do that across lots of events. And it's basically event management, but we can certainly ensure that is handled appropriately. I suppose the other thing to just, you mentioned an email that was sent, Councillor O'Farrell, and I think it was sent on the 10th of April, and I received it along with the members of the South East Area Committee. And I suppose we were in the middle of a Part 8 statutory process where the public consultation was closed. And I was advised that it is not appropriate for me to then go and speak to somebody else, because my initial reaction is always, of course, I'll go and meet someone, but I was told that would be outside the statutory process and that I would need to continue with the statutory process. So, as you're aware, it's a 20-week process. We went through the public consultation, and now this report is before you for noting and therefore goes to the May Council meeting for you to vote on it and to decide yourselves if it goes ahead or not.
But the public consultation that they had in the February-March one, there was no DPO invite in that. That was a standalone public consultation that was advertised on our website. The DPO was invited.
Damien, you've made that point, and just on that route, it would seem to me that if we have this initial area committee phase and then the report goes to the council meeting on the 13th of May, it would seem to me to be no breach of the process if this committee and if councillors asked for further information for the May the 13th meeting, and that further information being sought is the information that the DPO might wish to submit. I'll put it to you that way. And I think you should explore with the law agent if that is possible. Because I think most people don't want to stop a project happening. It's an important universal project, but also want to ensure that there is, the right sort of consultation. So if that is possible, I would ask that you would do that.
Certainly, no problem. Yeah. I'll check with the law agent. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, Chair. I didn't get an answer to my question in relation to whether other disability organisations individually raised concerns or made submissions or raised concerns about the consultation process. Thank you.
Pat?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Not that we have received, or I'm aware of, that other groups, other than the one that you received an email on this morning. The consultation website.
Sorry, just to confirm,
Only one more word.
On the submission, so we received one submission by a disability group, which was a previous participant in the process, who just voiced fully supporting this application, and then we had another submission by Changing Places Ireland, who were just requesting that a changing place was included. But those were the only two on disability. We had also one by the Irish Georgian Society on conservation issues, and then one by
Your mic has gone off.
Sorry.
Sorry, Damien. Sure. If you knock off, just let her answer, okay? Margaret, answer. Are you? Because I couldn't hear the final bit of your answer.
Yeah, sorry. So we had two submissions as part of the Part 8 process by disability people or groups, and then we had one by the Irish Georgian Society and one by TAI.
Okay, thanks. Now, Damien.
It's all changed since 2018. There isn't disability groups and these people and all. You know, there's a lot of third-party organisations. There were four people with disabilities, and in 2018, there was a special recognition for disabled persons organisations. They have special recognition, and we have to give them consideration. We have to give them reasonable. They have neurodivergent. We have to give them reasonable accommodation. So I would have thought, did we invite those people in the last one?
No, but Damien, you raised that point, yeah. And we have asked the official. I'm not taking from your point. We have asked. This would be explored between now and the 13th. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, I've seen people in this chamber going on for so long that they've lost arguments that they had won. So be careful. Okay. Yeah, Pat.
Yeah, in terms of the concerns regarding their ability to comment or access the information is, for example, one area where it's available is on the consultations.dublincity.ie website, where all the information is available in multiple formats, and the lead page of that website offers people who require it in any other format to contact the access officer. And I have had no request as access officer for any information in alternative formats, and I'm not aware of any concerns regarding ability to access the information other than the email you've received today. Thank you.
Okay, can I propose that this be noted and forwarded to the City Council in the normal way?
Agreed.
Okay, we're just moving on to item two. You're all welcome to stay. It relates to this standing man sink call. But before we all go, just to thank all of the staff for their presentations here this morning, and let's see where the project goes. We wish the Mansion House the best. Miriam. And all the staff who work in the Mansion House as well, obviously. Okay. Who's going to do the... Roy, take care, Damien. Roy, oh, I see you here now. Roy, do you want to give an update, and then we will see what people want to contribute? Is that okay?
Yes, Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. I trust you have the report in front of you, which was drafted up on Wednesday morning, the 17th, 2 days ago. So we do have a brief update on that. Just the background for anyone who hasn't had a chance to go through the report yet. Last Wednesday of last week, there was a reported void appeared on the road on Sandymount Green in front of the Mace convenience store on the Green. I think it was a worker or the owner of that shop first attended the scene and protected the carriageway from oncoming traffic to roll over it. The Gardaí were shortly afterwards on the scene, and then Dublin City Council, once we received the information, our roads maintenance unit went out and made it temporarily safe for oncoming traffic and pedestrians. So the environmental section attended site then on the following morning, and since then we've been working to fully reinstate the carriageway, upgrade the various pieces of infrastructure that were exposed under the ground. This was, I suppose, a very rare occurrence, and certainly the scale of it was probably a bit larger than what we normally come across. A number of services were exposed within the void, and in particular concern was the high voltage.
Roy, could you just hold on 1 second? Could we close the door there? Sorry, just there's music coming from downstairs, and it's quite loud. Sorry, Roy, it just was difficult
to
hear you.
No problem.
In fairness, on this occasion, this is an unscheduled meeting. Because the agreement was that there wouldn't be weddings here for scheduled meetings. But we don't take away from the musical enjoyment. We don't want to cancel the musical enjoyment of the wedding. Well, if they stop the music now, I could go down and sing them a song, you know, when it's over. Sorry, Ray. Roy, I think they're trying to shut the door. Roy, try it and we'll just see. It is quite loud. Sorry about this.
Absolutely. I'll try and speak up a little bit if that helps at all. So, look, essentially one of our main health and safety challenges was that there was a number of services in there by various different utility companies, with the ESB's high voltage service line being the one of particular concern. So that required them to have oversight of any activity in the vicinity while we tried to reconstruct the carriageway. So, look, an update to the report I put before you last Wednesday morning is that thereafter, on Wednesday afternoon, the ESB requested some concrete slabs to be poured and stated on both the top and bottom of their high voltage line to protect it for any future work in the area. So that delayed us by about a day and a half. So on the report, I did say that we should be at the latest gone from Sandy Mount Green next Monday. We anticipate that now on Sunday afternoon, we should have completely opened the road back up again. Currently, there's traffic management plans in place. Four-way stop and go to ensure traffic is moving. We haven't impeded the access to any of the businesses, so that will be maintained. And we are calling in on a daily basis to make sure the businesses know what's going on and the timelines for our work outside. So as of this morning, or yesterday evening rather, the ESB are off-site. We now have control of the excavation. We are over the high-voltage cable, so that's allowing us to bring in our CCTV staff. The safety concerns are greatly reduced. So our investigations are just going to conclude the likely causes of this. As my report said, it probably has occurred over a prolonged period of time due to seepage in and out of our surface water sewers. We do regularly maintain the gullies in this area. The DCC infrastructure, other than the road itself, is just predominantly the one gully and its connection into the sewer, which only collapsed as a result of the recent event, as we can see from the fresh cracks on the pipe that leads into the adjacent manhole. In short, we expect to be off-site at the end of the week. I did say this is probably a very rare occurrence, something of this scale made a little bit more difficult due to the number of services, and we appreciate it's a highly well-trafficked area, albeit only 30 kilometres per hour, to the best of my knowledge. We should be gone on Sunday evening.
Okay, thanks, Roy. I have Paddy and James and then myself. Paddy?
Thanks very much for the report, Chair. I decided to do a bit of research on sinkholes, and they're far more prevalent than most people would expect. The depth of this particular sinkhole is 1.2 metres. But the deepest sinkhole in the world is actually 2,172 feet deep. So to put things in perspective, I think the issue here is that the utilities involved, Uisce Éireann and ESB, they complicate the issue a little bit. But obviously, between Dublin City Council and the two other utilities, they can resolve the problem. It does beg the question about erosion and sand and whatever. I was thinking about the pool beg, the nearly 4,000 apartments that are being built off Sean Moore Road there on reclaimed land, that whether it's anything to do with climate change or not, but I think if you do your research on it, you'll realise that it is a relatively minor issue in the context of the size, dimensions and depth of sinkholes throughout the world. And it's not an unusual occurrence. So thank you for the report, and I presume it's business as usual in Sandy Mount from next week or whatever. Thank you.
And thanks, Paddy, for looking so deeply into the sinkholes around the world for us. James?
I think you meant that literally. Thanks, Roy, for your report. And look, in the first instance, just to say, I think Dublin City Council should be commended for the speed in which they responded to this issue. You know, like myself, along with presumably lots of other people, made contact, and you know, between yourselves, the Gardaí, and everybody else, you were extremely rapid in resolving the issues. I think it also shows, you know, I think almost the first time since I've been on the council, you know, you actually saw an interagency approach. So you've had Ishgair and you've had ESB, and so often we talk in this council just about how siloed the various entities are that are involved in digging up our roads and utility companies. But it shows when there's a crisis or there's a problem, you can all work together. But outside of that remit, we find it very challenging for you all to work together. And it'd be great, I'd like to be optimistic to say that lessons can be learned from this, and you know, an interagency approach really does make a big difference to something like this. But I suppose I acknowledge that what you say, that this is a rare occurrence. It clearly is. Sinkholes are rare occurrences. But what you've identified in your report, I suppose, should be concerning for everyone in Sandy Mount. And that's, you know, the broken sewage pipes, the other damaged pipes that existed underneath the ground in Sandy Mount Green. And for a long time, particularly residents on Tritonville Road, because it's had to be dug up on several occasions, have identified just how old the pipes are underneath that particular road, and presumably along other roads. Do you think this helps make the case, or for us to make the case to Irish Water, that the relevant roads in the Sandy Mount area should be put on a list of capital infrastructure works for pipe replacements? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you said it yourself, this type of erosion that took place is quite typical. And I think the sinkhole was 1.7 or 1.7 metres, but you guys had to go as far down as 2.7 metres to fix the problem. And I think it is indicative of an issue right across that area where, you know, we're going to see infrastructure works when it comes to air grids that are going to take place along that way. And it must be possible for Irish Water to synchronise those types of works to deliver a pipe replacement programme of works right across that area, because it is probable, at least, that we're going to see similar problems. We see it with flooding all of the time in these areas, particularly Tritonville Road and elsewhere, and I think we should use this as an opportunity to make the case for further investment in the area. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Hazel?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Rory. Listen, detailed report, and to James's point, it was a great response. It was great to see yourselves and Ishgair and also ESB all working together on a, I was saying to Frank, I don't think I've ever seen anything make it so quickly onto RTE News before in relation to utilities and a hole in the ground anyway. But on the note of what was found and then thereafter, I have a question in relation to costs. So we know that there are exposed pipes. We know that there are ESB voltage, as you say, found, your report listed. So on repairs, is that down to us in DCC that's bearing the cost? Is it then Irish Water? How does that work in relation to repairs? The reason I ask that is because myself and Councillor Lacey have been back and forth supporting folks on around Nutley in relation to their water and water pressure and water maintenance. And I find that Irish Water has become more and more unaccountable and more unresponsive in relation to their role and informing people of the issues and also protecting a water supply and also their customer service as well. So, and that's not your problem. But my question stems from, if it's a pipe issue that led to this, is it back to Irish Water? Is it something that when they come into this committee meeting next month, I know that was my motion for them to come in, that they need to answer? Because I'm just wondering, from the damage that you have assessed, on what part is played by which agency that needs to cover it? Obviously, yourselves need, DCC are the ones fixing it, but ultimately, who did the liability belong to? Thank you. Oh, and also communication. How is this, the fixing and the post kind of work stuff communicated to the local area? Is it just via the reps and also via the online channels, or are you guys doing a quick drop around, or how is that? Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. And look, just to join with everybody else in thanking everybody for the quick response, also to thank Brian for ensuring it would be on the agenda today, and for Roy for coming along. I think there's two things. James talked about the ongoing works that are required, and perhaps this should be used as an opportunity to seek wider investment in the area in terms of what's needed. My only real question, Roy, is people are always concerned when things like this happen, and they're worried that it's going to happen, you know, in a greater level. Is there any reason why people in the area should be concerned as to the possibility of this recurring in any great extent? And if you could give us some degree of assurance on that. And just to comment on something that Hazel said, Irish Water are actually brilliant at responding to stuff. The trouble is the responses are meaningless. I mean, you get a reply from Irish Water about a half an hour after you send it, but it's a totally pointless response, because it says nothing, and then they leave us in the abyss. So I'm looking forward to meeting with them if they do come along to the next meeting, and we can try and get some sort of arrangement with them. Okay, I'm going to let Roy and Brian come in, and if that, we'll close the meeting if everybody's happy enough. Okay, Roy?
Okay, thank you for those questions. I'll do my best to touch on everything there, and to be fair, I suppose it has got a lot more media attention than these events normally get. So I look at Councillor McCartan, to do with climate change and so forth. This is a specific incident where this occurred. We're pretty certain, or we'd be confident, that it was due to one of two possible options, where basically the infrastructure, the connection to the main sewer, could have found the smallest of opening in it, where over a prolonged period of time, rainwater or ingress would have slowly silted the sands away. It wouldn't, other than rainfall itself, of course, contributing to this. Climate change wouldn't have played an overall factor on it. I suppose, typically speaking, these kind of issues, we would have come across them one or two per year, typically an awful lot smaller, largely and always unnoticed. We have had a preliminary meeting with my colleagues, and the experience, I suppose, I joined the Drainage Department in 2002, and have spoken with the various engineers involved over the last two decades. We would have three or four sinkholes, is what we're calling them, of this kind of scale in that time. None in Sandy Mount, but we would have one to two smaller depressions where we typically repair them in a day or over a day and a half. Which largely go unnoticed in general terms. That's what our construction crews are doing. We have four of them continuously active, repairing gullies and various issues with them on a daily basis. Councillor Gagan, just in terms of the operation workers, and I was going to conclude by, I suppose, and thank you for acknowledging the work that they did. This is probably one of the more riskier and safety challenging excavations that they have to do, particularly the depth that you're going down with sands, which are notably unstable as opposed to the clays that we'd have and more frequently come across in our excavations. So in that context, I appreciate the acknowledgement. And broken sewer pipes, they're regularly, you know, they're part of what we do on an ongoing basis, and as we continue to support the Ishka Air and through the SLA, we do have insight into the operations around the Ishka Air and infrastructure, attending chokes and so forth on various sewers. There's a combined sewer serving the Sandy Mount area. It's 1 foot in diameter, 300 mil, and we had been out there to carry out maintenance on the sewers as a result of a choke, actually last March 23rd, I think we were there. They're not untypical across the city. That's what our heavy infrastructure, our heavy plant is there for. It's the work that they carry out on an ongoing basis. Nothing other than that specific choke, which was unrelated to this location, has been noted on our records in recent times. From DCC's own remit and surface water management, which is what I oversee, it's the gully cleaning operations and so forth. And I've looked over our records here. We were in February. We cleaned all around the gullies all around Sandy Mount Green. We're roughly getting there every 8 months. I think the previous time that we cleaned the gullies was on the 11th of October last year, and then back to March 2023 prior to that. And nothing of significance was noted. And as I think I mentioned earlier on, this gully and its collapse was just as a result of the void becoming exposed. The gully hadn't been contributing towards the seepage of the soils into the sewers over a prolonged period of time. And the reason I say a prolonged period of time is when we've jetted the sewers and so forth, we wouldn't have noticed any quantity of sand that would have given us a concern to investigate the area to a further degree. And as I said, it's very rare occurrence, something of this scale. And it's the first that I'm aware of in the Sandy Mount area since 2003 at the latest. Synchronization of work. Look, in emergencies, the first thing we do is to go out and solve, make the place safe. It's not a matter of attributing costs or finger pointing. It is to make sure that the public safety and the safety of our workers resolve the issue as best we can. There's no smoking gun in this situation. We know that the water main didn't contribute to it. We know that the sewer may have ultimately facilitated the carrying of sands away, but it's not necessarily the cause in itself. We do have a private sewer going through there as well, which is which looks like it's been broken for quite a while. But as I said, the CCTV crew have now arrived on site. We're just trying to confirm what the actual likely cause of the event is. So in terms of attributing the cause, it potentially could be a private matter as well. But nonetheless, we're going to make it safe. And while we're there, we are ensuring that the manhole covers are rebuilt and make sure that they're going to last going forward. The gully connection would be new, and a new connection is being made there right at the moment. And we're making some improvements for the other utilities as well. Councillor Chu, yes, look, the profile of this was a lot more than we'd normally expect. The costs at the moment, it's to be determined, but Ishka Éireann are also contributing in terms of the traffic management plan personnel that are there, and the staff are part of the SLA, so as well as ourselves. So look, the costs haven't been determined or attributed as yet, but certainly that the staff there at the moment are GCC employees predominantly. The risks of this happening again are very low. We have done a preliminary risk assessment of these kind of things. You're talking about tens of thousands of kilometres of just drainage infrastructure across the city, and that's not including all the private connections from every single private property and over 55,000 gullies that all connect into our drainage infrastructure. The likelihood of a crack on one of those pipes occurring is, and materializing in this kind of a void under the road has been, relatively speaking, it's like a needle in a haystack. The risks of this happening, as I said, we do monitor the gullies there roughly every 8 to 10 months. We do have a CCTV vans that follow up on this. If there's any issues with the connections, and that all gets reported back into our reconstruction team for attention thereafter. So we have a general plan in place for managing and monitoring DCC infrastructure around surface water. This one didn't turn up, unfortunately, even in our recent surveys. But as I said, the consequences, we still hold, we have what's flexible carriageway surfaces. It's mastic or tarmacadam. It's about 300 mil thick. Typically, what you find when these things are occurring is you get a light depression in the road, and that's how it materializes. It's usually heavy vehicles. It's low traffic speeds in that area in general. It's something as big as a double-decker bus, which is what exposed the void on this occasion would be typical. It's unlikely to be a car. It wouldn't be heavy enough at 2.5 tons or so forth with electric cars. So in that instance, the likely impact is potential damage to the wheel of a car and so forth, but we would see nothing. And that's on a very rare occasion that this would happen, as I said, once in 20 years in Sandy Mount area at least. So, the consequences when we do a risk assessment on the likelihood of it occurring and the outcome of the impact, it would be very low.
Okay, Roy, thanks very much. Brian, do you want to add anything? Okay, can we thank you all? And just to remind you, Brian is meeting with the stakeholders in relation to the pedestrianisation of the is it the east side? I've always forgotten this. Of Sandy Mount Green next Thursday. So wish him well on that. Okay? Best of luck, everyone.